before episode 540 of Gareth Jones on Speed, here's a sting in the style of Sigur Rós. And welcome to an episode of Gareth Jones on Speed that is full of anticipation, hope and glee. And the glee, I'm extremely thrilled to be able to say, generally will come from Stevie Sackin, who's joining us for this show. Hey, Stevie.
Hey, there's a lot of glee here, honestly. I'm so excited.
I always associate your happy face with glee. Zog, has Stevie been gleeful in the build-up to the first race so far?
He has. He's certainly been gleeful since he's arrived here. We've been having a lovely time just catching up. Although we've saved all of our F1 speculation and excitement for the show.
Good lad.
Yeah, don't want to go off too early. Let's actually get all that in the conversation.
Good. Or is it they say, shall I tell you the story of Johnny McGory? Shall I begin it? That's all that's in it. Right, you've got to stretch a story out, get to the point at the end. Talking of points, look, you know, I've been model building, right? I'm going to show you this. I'm building a model.
With Lego?
Not with Lego. It's a scratch model of the SLS, right? Now, ooh, if you get an idea, what I'm showing you now, that is the escape tower alone. So this is the bit that covers the Orion command module. And you imagine the European service module will be there, and then the interim cryogenic propulsion stage. I've got carpet rolls for the SRBs. It's going to be 3 metres tall.
I was going to say, for listeners who can't see the model that Gareth has been holding up, it's a good job, but it has been cobbled together out of bits of cardboard, loo roll, and some off-cuts of paper, and a
Christmas pudding.
A Christmas pudding bowl, yeah. But yeah, but if that's the escape tower, then okay, I don't know what scale it is, but that's going to be a big rocket. That's going to be a couple of metres high, isn't it?
Well, it's life-size, isn't
it? It's just 3 metres shy of 3 metres tall by the time it's
and
finished.
And it has about as much chance of flying as Starliner. Because
poor old Boeing.
Yeah. Well, and we will not get into this today, because although this is something we are very interested in, but yeah, there's been a very damning report just released about the failures of Boeing's Starliner capsule. It's really quite bad.
Yeah. I'm full of hope for that which does fly. We hope the Orion and the SLS. You know, they've now got some helium leak issues for the interim cryogenic propulsion stage, which means it looks like a rollback to the VAB, and that March window is now being put back to April for the launch, because they've got to tie it in with the position of the moon. It's they're really specific windows, which actually suits me, because I might just get my model finished before it flies.
Okay.
But enough of that. Stevie, how are you? What have you been doing apart from watching?
Very good.
All of the testing. Yeah.
I've been totally obsessed, actually. I don't think I've ever been so excited and enthralled by the pre-season testing before. I don't know what it is about this, whether it's Lando winning last year, the enormous changes to the regulations, but it's just absolutely gripped me, and I'm just watching the whole thing on YouTube, just every piece of content I can find. Most of it is horrible, but, you know, there's some very interesting stuff.
Yeah. You were poorly last week, which is why we didn't have you on the show last week. Would have loved to have you, and I'm glad you're better now. I mean, that must have really helped. You were at home, being able to watch 24-hour testing, right?
Totally. It was just on all day, every day. Yes.
There's always an upside to being unwell. There is that. I remember watching the Tokyo Olympics in 1964, I suppose, when I was about 3 years old, being off school and in bed, and Dad brought a portable telly, because he had a TV shop, into my bedroom, and I watched the Olympics. I can sing the theme tune. Down, 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 down. Sorry, I've gone right deep off on one now. Should we pull it back to testing then?
Let's have a go.
Right, this is how I view it. And I'm going to go through the 11 teams that now exist in order of merit. And we can negotiate over position and why we think each of the teams should be where they are and how they're looking. Okay, we'll start with number 11. And this is a great start because, Zog, you kind of already won your bet, haven't you?
Well,
because... Would we all agree that in 11th place at the moment, the worst team at the moment are Aston Martin? Agreed?
Oh, absolutely agreed. And it says something about the state of Aston Martin, or how they look at the moment, that having Lance Stroll as one of their drivers is far from the worst problem they have right now. You know, there's a lot.
Wow, and, that's bad.
You know, the engine is... very underpowered. Honda has a lot of work to do there. The engine doesn't seem to be integrating with the rest of their package very well. There's work there to be done. Their gearbox has a lot of issues, and they can't use the electrical side of the car. They can't,
can't
deploy and harvest energy as they would like. Yeah, they're in a bad way. But my Cadillac bet is looking pretty good for the start of the season anyway. Unfortunately, I only get paid at the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly. But honestly, you know, when we took that bet, I wasn't expecting the team that Caddy were going to beat was going to be Aston Martin.
Right.
This is just such a surprise. No, and it's shocking. Yeah. It's shocking and disappointing. And, I really hope that they start to turn it around and develop it, because they can't stay this bad.
And they won't stay that bad, will they? You know, they've got money and they've got very smart people, and, you know, maybe they do have, as a lot of people say, a car that can be developed into one of the quickest. But it's going to be a while before we're really going to see whether that's the case or not, or whether... You know, actually, the problems are much deeper and worse. But yeah, but they are in a very bad way. It's a great shame. At the same time, that there's sort of a bit of a comedy element to a team that has had such high expectations to have come out with such a bad package. It's really rather sad, and it makes for a lot of drama at the start of the season. It makes for a lot of conversations like this, people that, you know, want something to talk about in the off season before the racing actually starts. But it's a great shame.
So there seems to be a lot of evidence that the engine really isn't performing.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of the sort of noise around other issues is genuine, or is sort of trying to deflect away from the engine?
I think the reason that they are so far behind at the moment is that it is a combination of all those things. As Zog said, you know, they're building their gearbox for the first time, yet that means they're going to have to be a little conservative. The engine doesn't seem to deliver the power that they want. They've got heat problems with it, which has compromised the aerodynamics, so it's still evolving. And the rumour is that Honda won't be able to do anything about the engine until the Japanese Grand Prix. So in the meantime, they're stuck with this hot, underpowered engine. Having said that, it's raised a very interesting question with the FIA. The FIA going, wait, what, your engine won't even, was it recharged to 250 kilowatts, let alone 350 kilowatts? Are those the figures? I'm not sure.
Those are the numbers I've heard, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the numbers I've heard.
And the FIA are concerned about this because that was the prerequisite of the engine that we asked you all to deliver, and you said you would. And if you can't, then maybe we have to look at perhaps changing the rules to reduce the reliance on the electrical part of the system for all teams, you know, they're still learning. There is this fear, of course, the car's going to get to certain tracks, Monza, for instance, and be clipping down the straight and running out of energy, you know.
Now, it's interesting because I've heard the same thing, that, yeah, the FIA is concerned that the electrical management, the, you know, managing the harvesting and the deployment of electrical power could compromise not just racing, but maybe safety enough that they might want to change the rules during the season to reduce the amount of electrical power in the mix and increase the relative amount of the internal combustion part of the powertrain. But I thought it was more driven by a sort of, you know, a more general concern that there are going to be particular tracks where a lot of teams are going to have problems with harvesting enough power during a typical lap, that they are, as you say, going to be running out of power. They're going to have this clipping problem. Yeah, and that's not working. But I understood they were going to get a little way into the season to see how it works out, you know, get a few races in before they make a decision about that. But there is a kind of a plan B evolving there. But I wasn't aware that it was such a, you know, an Aston Martin related thing.
Because
I mean, maybe they have the worst problem.
Yeah, Stevie, on the gliometer, Stevie scale, right? So we've got Aston Martin at 11th, 10th. This is going to bring you glee. You better explain why. In my view, it's Cadillac.
For sure. Yes, Cadillac. Well, I mean, you know, Cadillac are new to the grid. So, you know, new team, new engine, new chassis, everything new. So, you know, for them to be showing up, you know, with a car that will run and complete the distance in Melbourne, that's an achievement. But performance wise you know, you would expect them to be at the back. I mean, I'm expecting to be at the back, and that's why I bet Zoggy that
they would be at the back.
Just you wait.
So you're really rooting for Aston Martin now, aren't you, Stevie? You really want them to get ahead of Cadillac, don't you? Just to make this point,
I do. Absolutely. It's £10 here.
Who's going to do the better out of those two, Perez and Bottas in the Cadillac, Stevie? Who would you say is going to come out the better driver this year?
Oh, I think Perez.
Yeah?
I think Perez will. Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, they're both top drivers.
Yeah.
They're both really good. And, you know, and a great, great choice by the team. You know, I think it was a fantastic decision to bring them both in.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for doing that. That's very true. Yeah. And Colton Herter, who is their reserve driver, son of Brian Herter, he's in F2 at the moment, and at the F2 test in Bahrain, I think he had the fourth quickest time. I wish Colton Herter well. I hope he does well. I can't wait to watch F2 this year because he's there. Can't wait. Okay, next team. Right, in my view, the ninth best team at present showing is Williams.
Yeah, I've got them at the same point in my pecking order. And
good.
Yeah, it's, again, a bit of a shame. You know, I was a big fan of the James Vowles-led Williams renaissance. I think he's been doing a magnificent job at bringing that team on and, you know, making them competitive again. But they...
You're a Williams fan on record of being a Williams fan, aren't you?
Well, yeah. You know, we've all supported them in the past. But they've started this season late with a car that's, you know, a bit overweight, apparently. They haven't been able to do the kind of work that other teams have been able to do in pre-season testing to really shake the car down and get it ready for Melbourne. So they're very much going to be starting the season on the back foot, by the looks of it. But there is absolutely the prospect that they can improve considerably by the end of the season. So I wouldn't at all rule out that they'll have jumped a few spots in the pecking order by the end of the season.
Did I hear correctly that last year they ran a two-year-old tub? That the car was essentially, they stopped development to throw everything at this car. I think that was Williams, wasn't it? It wasn't, or was it LP? No, I think it was Williams.
Was it?
Well, I forget.
If so, there's really no excuse for them being, you know, as late as they were with the car and not being able to make the first day of testing again.
I have a deep concern about the Williams. There's an awful lot of pale blue on that car, Barclays, Komatsu. It looks like a Benetton B194, you know, the one that Schumacher drove with a Renault engine. It kind of smacks of Flavio Briatore. I know he's nothing to do with that team. He's at Alpine. But every time I see the Williams, I go, Benetton? No. Have you got a favourite car on the grid in terms of livery and colour scape at the moment, Stevie?
So far, I like the fact that the Red Bulls have gone glossy.
Okay, yeah.
I like the, you know, the kind of the matte paint job was you know, was okay, but I think racing cars should be really shiny. That's my
Yeah, fair point. Yeah.
In terms of the colours, no, I haven't formed an opinion on those yet.
Okay, immediately above Williams, I've got Racing Bulls, Lawson and Arvid Lindblad. I mean, it's an argument. Is it Racing Bulls or is it Audi as the eighth team? I think Audi are going to do a better job than Racing Bulls.
I'd put them closer to Alpine, probably, but it's quite hard to separate, I think. You know, Audi, Haas, Racing Bulls, Alpine. Those four, I think, are going to be quite hard to... Yeah, we really don't know. They're Let's see how they look at Melbourne. Racing Bulls have done a lot of laps in testing, and
yeah, Arvid Lindblad holds the record, doesn't he, for the greatest number of laps? Actually,
I think so. Yeah.
He does. Yeah.
So they, you know, they've got a solid, reliable car, and for a midfield team to start with a good, solid, reliable car is, yeah, that's a pretty solid basis for them to build their year on. I'm sure they won't develop their car as well as Williams will, for example, and maybe not Audi. I mean, you know, Audi seemed to take quite a few significant steps in testing, it seemed, particularly with their engine.
Yeah.
So...
And completely different aerodynamic architecture on the side pods when they turned up for testing. Wait, what? Yeah. What's this now? Yeah. Wow. Okay. Good, lads. And it looks like an Audi, doesn't it? That silver and red, it looks like the Audis that used to win Le Mans for 1,000 years. Yeah. Really, they've done well there. And have you noticed that the roll hoop, you know, the A-shaped roll hoop is accented in red to make it look like an Audi A as well? Good branding.
Yeah. No, I think that the Audi looks, you know, that's a good-looking car. You know, in an unspectacular way, but that's a good-looking car. But, yeah, while Racing Bulls, I think, will have a solid start to the year, I think as the season goes on, they'll probably be outdeveloped by at least Audi.
Okay.
But at this stage, what I love about, one of the things I love about the testing is the fact that, you know, you just don't know what data is really reliable. You know, it's just that, you know, there's so much going on. But the one thing that you do know is the number of laps they run.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's absolutely,
yeah, gives you an indicator.
So, it's a piece of data. And it certainly demonstrates something about reliability. And the fact that the Racing Bulls and the Red Bulls have done so many laps on this new power unit is astonishing. I mean, astonishing. You think about the Barcelona test and the fact that they made it, you know, a secret test because they were so worried about the cars just being scattered around the circuit with kind of smoke coming out of them. And it didn't happen.
It is a remarkable achievement by Red Bull in association with Ford to deliver an engine from... I mean, it's not that they, you know, haven't built engines for a while or they've been building engines in other series. It's like they haven't built an engine themselves.
Right. Although, of course, they hired plenty of people that have built engines. You know, it's obviously... So they put together the right bunch of people to build that area for them. But yeah, as you say, this isn't an area in which anybody sandbags, and no teams are going to pass up doing more laps in testing to conceal anything the way that they might turn down an engine a little bit because they know they can turn it up again at the first race and they're still getting good data. So yeah, I agree. It's a good, solid data point, and Racing Bulls look very good in that respect.
Okay, above them, I've got, so it goes 8 in my view, Racing Bulls, 7, Audi, mainly because I believe in Hulk and Bortoletto, and I believe in Matteo Binotto, who's there running things at the moment. I think he's a very, very good man to have at that team. So above Audi, Alpine, because they've got these Mercedes engines, which are a great relief to them. They've had a battle with a rotten old Renault block for a few years. So they must have got the most out of their chassis. Would you agree Alpine going to do a better job than Audi?
Very close. I honestly just don't know. Honestly, I do have a bit of a problem with Alpine. I've got to be honest, because much as I like their drivers, I'm not a fan of their team boss, and I just don't think he should be. I think they should never have lifted the ban on him. So I do have a little bit of a thing with Alpine, unfortunately. But yeah, they've got a Mercedes engine in there, so they probably have the best engine in the back of that car.
I love the fact that Flavio's back. I just distrust. It's like someone to boo. You know, you need the bad guys. You need someone to direct your ire at.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Exactly. I want a team, not to like. And
yeah.
There you Priatore. Go. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got your villain. There you go. Yeah. He's right there. Yeah. He's right there.
Right. So above Alpine, in my view, at number five, I'm putting Haas. I think Haas are going to lead that group at the moment because the Ferrari engine looks good. Behrmann's outstanding and have put in some incredible performances last year. And given their resources in such a complicated car last year, to come out of the blocks looking really good, my money's, if I was a betting man, I would be backing Haas to do exceptionally well this year. They're my hot take.
Okay. Oh, well, you see, actually, my other F1 bet, I did place another, wasn't on Haas. We'll come to that later, maybe. But
okay.
No, I agree, Haas have got great possibility. That Ferrari engine is good, and they tend to do very well with the resources they have. Yeah, they're going to, again, I think they will have a pretty solid start to the season. How well they'll develop, we will see. But yeah, I think solid upper midfield for sure.
And I did notice that, on the test timing sheets that, you saw the unreliable data, Haas kept on appearing kind of, up in those times. Yeah. And so clearly there is pace there. So, that they're good test.
Didn't they clock the highest top speed at one point as well? Was that Haas? I think I've got that wrong.
I think Red Bull hung on to highest top speed.
Okay, interesting. You see, that's where the gains are, I think, this year, because the cars are a little bit slower into the corners because they can't brake as hard as the ground effect cars. So they have longer braking zones, which is going to encourage overtaking, but they will be slower through the corner. So you have to make your gains in ultimate aero, getting the most out of your high speed, which will bring me to the top four in a minute. But here we go, into the top four then, right? The slowest of the top four teams, in my view, at the moment, is Red Bull.
Yeah, probably. Although it is very close with McLaren. I think I think that top four is definitely split between, McLaren and Red Bull 3 and 4, but I'm not sure who's 3 and who's 4.
Yeah.
But
they're equal position. There's so little in it. I agree, yeah.
And so you would discount all of the evidence that we've got from George's interviews about how fast the Red Bulls are?
We know why he was saying that, don't we?
Yeah, to just call back to what you're saying about Aston Martin earlier, I don't think that the other technical issues that were raised around Aston Martin, the battery and gearbox, I don't think that was intended as any kind of distraction from the power unit issues. But yeah, I'm quite sure that Russell banging on about how quick Red Bull were was a bit of a, look at what these guys are doing. Just don't look at what's going on behind our curtain. Look behind their curtain.
Oh, look at that over there. Yeah, a tree. Yeah. Stevie, you sent me a fantastic link to a thing on YouTube called Insight F1, which really super analyze the acceleration and deceleration data on all the cars from the test. I mean, it was bewilderingly complicated, but I tried to see through it. And one of the takeaways I got from this was that it looks like Mercedes can deliver more power than anyone else, right? But they're not doing it because they've done it here and there. Then they generally just don't bother. So that's why I've put McLaren third, Ferrari second, and Mercedes first, because not only, you know, are they sharing a great power unit, Mercedes, with McLaren and Alpine and Williams, but they've got an integrated system. They understand it and they're running it to their best. So, in my view, Ferrari second quickest. We've got to talk about Ferrari. Got to talk about Ferrari.
We have. And this is where my second F1 bet of the season came in, because I have actually put some money on Hamilton to win the World Drivers' Championship.
Good lad.
Now, I do not think he's even close to favourite to pull that off. George Russell is favourite, surely.
Yeah.
That's pretty clear in my mind right now. But I was able to back him at 14-1, and I think his chances, his odds of winning the World Drivers' Championship are a fair bit better than 14-1. So we'll see.
Stevie, what's your view on the top two, on Ferrari particularly?
I think the Mercedes certainly is, you know, appears to be the fastest, and this compression ratio information is fascinating, you know, yeah. And that appears to be significant. The Ferrari is so interesting in so many ways that, you know, the fact that they started their development for this car so early last year, you know, clearly that was a very, very interesting decision, you know, sacrificing upgrades last year in order to get this car right. And then some of these developments that they're coming up with in the testing, you know, around the rear of the car and that rear wing, it was a thing of beauty. Beauty.
We completely flipped. I mean, we've been discussing on WhatsApp, the three of us, the revelations, but the minute that that flipping wing appeared, we had to engage with that wholesale, the three of us, and try and understand the aerodynamics of what they're achieving there. I'm still not convinced we fully understand.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I think until I have somebody at Ferrari explaining exactly what's going on there,
yeah,
and somebody from another team agreeing that that's what's going on, I'm not going to feel that I have a solid understanding of what they're doing. But the most plausible thing to me that I've heard so far is that what they are doing with that inverted wing is a trick that also relates to what they're doing with their trick exhaust.
Yeah.
They've got this little extra bit of bodywork at the back that is diverting the exhaust flow upwards that is in the process generating downforce. A little bit reminiscent of the blown diffuser,
yeah,
days, finding that kind of trick. And what they're doing is the inverted wing is interacting with that diverted exhaust flow in such a way that it's maybe just giving the car a little bit of, well, thrust, really. It's they're getting, yeah, a little bit of force in a forward direction, whether you think of that as, in effect, reducing drag or producing a thrust doesn't really matter, but it's giving them a bit of a speed advantage. Now, they haven't been using this wing consistently, though. They used it and then they stopped using it, so maybe they are still assessing whether the advantages that they get from that trick, because they've clearly identified something there that is at least worth trying. And other teams have talked about how this is something that they, I think Williams, wasn't it? I think James Vowles mentioned that it was something that they hadn't thought of and they were looking into it themselves now, as you always do. Anytime you see anybody else doing something that you haven't tried, you have a go at it and you see what it can do for you.
Like I said on our WhatsApp group, it's as if the FAA went, okay, and this year we're going to allow active aerodynamics. And Ferrari went, okay, how active do you want to make them, you know? And I'm kind of mystified because the upper plane of this flip wing that inverts is an under-cambered section. It's an inverted under-cambered section. It behaves like a wing, a very slow glider, you know, fat at the front, curly at the back, and it climbs up at a steep angle. If you reverse that, you get a less than perfect aerodynamic shape to pass through. You'll be narrow at the front and then this bulbous rear end, which is going to give you drag. But somehow they found an optimum angle of attack in combination with that energized air that's being kicked up from that deflector and the bodywork outside the rear of the exhaust, that they've made this do what you say, turn that into thrust rather than lift. It's producing zero downforce, it's producing zero lift, but you can angle it in such a way that it will produce a little bit of thrust or reduce drag, exactly as you said. It's the same thing, isn't it? But I think in doing so, what they're doing is, because that rear wing also has dihedral to it like that, it's V-shaped like that, when it rolls inverted, it actually creates a larger slot gap between the upper element and the lower element of the rear wing. And of course, the more gap you have there, the more airflow you get through, the less drag you get. So it may be compound. I love it. It's the most exciting thing in Formula One since six-wheel Tyrrell.
Yeah, well, you know, we like to see this kind of innovation, this kind of situation where the rules are rewritten, all the rules remain as they are, but, you know, a clever engineer reads those rules very closely and they go, oh, okay, well, you know, it says I can do this and I can't do that. But within these rules, I can do this really clever thing that nobody else has thought of. Well, you know, and we love it. And so I really applaud, you know, assuming that Ferrari have identified some blindingly clever little trick there, which I think they have. Well done for them for doing that. Also, they apparently will have a fair advantage on the starts this year.
Oh, yeah.
Because of...
Were you going to say that, Stevie? I can see you were itching to say something there.
Well, no, I was just going to mention the fact that, you know, Zog's mentioning that the kind of, you know, interpretation of the rules, and there was the one rule that I saw about the wings was the long 400 milliseconds allowed for the deployment of the change.
A full rotation, exactly, or,
you
know, right.
Whatever it was you were going to do to change the
rotation,
you had 400 milliseconds, which is an enormous amount of time, relatively.
And
Ferrari clearly saw that and thought, so how can we use that? And they used it, you know, with this rotation, which is much, much slower than just flipping the thing in the same...
I hope they're right.
Although, to clarify, the fact that they've got 400 milliseconds, it simply means that they can rotate it more than they were before. It's not that there's actually anything that they're doing within that 400 millisecond window. Yeah, it's not like there's a 200 millisecond moment when the wing is at a particular angle. Mm. Yeah, just to clarify. Yeah, no, exactly. You know, yeah, well done. Yeah. Well done, Ferrari, for identifying that.
I have a slight concern that during that period of rotation, there will be a moment where it's producing more drag than it should be as it gets back to it. So it's going to be slightly unsettling. It'll happen only for a second, but it won't be a smooth transition. There will be,
a kind of bump of, you know,
it will increase
drag
before it decreases.
It's like deploying an air brake for, you know, 100 milliseconds or something.
But you're going to spend
massively longer either on a straight or in a corner than you do making that transition. So I would imagine that, you know, that occasional very brief aero braking is probably not going to be an issue. But that is surely exactly one of the things that they will have been assessing during this pre-season test. We think this trick works, but is it worth the little extra bit of drag that we're getting during the flip? You know, that's what they'd be figuring out, I guess.
It's the most Professor Pat Pending thing we've had in F1 for years. I'm so excited. And I'm most of all excited that it's in my team, Ferrari, you know. Now, we all love Lewis. What are the runes? Could he outperform Leclerc? All he has to do is outperform Leclerc, right? If he does that, he could win. He's got to do that first. Stevie, what do you feel?
I think he can. I mean, yes, I would have taken that 14-1 bet too. I think it's fantastic odds for Lewis to win. And I think given the input that he's had to the development of the new car and his experience, I think that he certainly has a chance here. You know, and we know how fast he is, we know how good he is, and this car is a car that's been developed, you know, to an extent around him and around what he wants from it. So For sure.
He's full of your glee at the moment. You look him in interviews. He said a couple of things like, oh, you need a PhD to understand the energy deployment. Uh-oh. But he's also, you can see it in his eyes. He said, yeah, I think I can do this. And hooray, it warms my gleeless heart to see that, because I want him to get that eighth championship. And if he has a good year this year, even if he doesn't win it, you know, he's got another shot next year, maybe, because his contract is rumoured to be more than 2 years, apparently.
He absolutely has a shot at it. If they give him a good enough car, that will, you know, lift him a little bit more, and yeah, he could absolutely do it. Looking at, you know, in the cold, hard light of day, how likely is he to beat Leclerc? I mean, it's close. Honestly, I think Leclerc will actually, honestly, probably be a little quicker than Lewis this year, but it will depend on just exactly how that car behaves. You know, it really will depend on, I think, just how much that car favours one or the other's style and which of them gets on better with the car. But no, but I'm very excited to look forward to a season where Ferrari will give Leclerc and Hamilton a car that can challenge for the championship. Maybe, hopefully.
Let's hope so.
Come on, boys.
It's not going to be a straightforward season. There are going to be disasters. There's going to be emotion. I think Cadillac will have their moments. I think Cadillac will come away from some crazy race where there's been a lot of breakdowns and stuff, and they will make it into the top 10 and they'll score a point on their first season. Stevie, you're shaking your head. You don't believe
it. It won't happen.
Look, come on. I mean, Cadillac... I think they could well beat Aston Martin at the first race, and they have already, you know, acquitted themselves, I think, very respectably for a team that for several years has been sort of, you know, poo-pooed by the F1 establishment and has been, you know, denied an entry for quite a long time. Oh, we're not sure you're going to be good enough. Are you really going to be up to scratch? Well, what we've seen in pre-season testing is they have done a much better job than Aston Martin. They've done a much better job than, you know, the team that has Adrian Newey and all of that history. Plus, they've got two terrific legacy drivers in there, you know, two well-respected F1 names. So I think they've achieved really quite a lot already. And, yeah, there's a good chance they're going to be Aston at the first.
There is much to be excited about, isn't there? You know, the anticipation is almost as good as the thing itself, isn't it? It's like dating. It's like the anticipation is as good as the moment, isn't it? And we've had this brilliant build-up to it this year. I hope it satisfies. I'm certain it will. You know, you've got so many new variables and hopes and things available. And also, well, I remember, we've got the WEC starting soon as well. We're going to Le Mans together. Yeah, those three, aren't we?
We are.
Can't wait.
Yeah. And we're at the Team Langoustine campsite again this year. And it's not absolutely confirmed yet, but it's very likely that the Gareth Jones On Speed band will be playing possibly two sets, if one maybe two, at the campsite. So if you're a Team Langoustine client and you go there, you're in for an extra, I don't know about treat, but an extra lot of loud noise at the campsite this year.
Hey, it's a great show. It's a great show.
Thank you. Stevie, just glorious having you on the programme. Any last thoughts for the season? What are your hopes? You want Lewis to win? You think George is going to win? Heart says this, head says what? What do you think?
I think George is going to win it this year. I think the Mercedes is looking like the fastest car, despite all of the distractions. No, I think Mercedes are going to be great. I think McLaren are going to be competitive as well, though. I do think, you know, again, that power unit is clearly really, really quick. And, you know, McLaren have been slightly under the radar, I think. So I think maybe Lando will again be competing for it, you know.
Let's hope so. You can't discount McLaren. They've got track record of being on form at the moment. Hey, I can't wait. The next episode of this show will be in 2 weeks' time after the first race in Melbourne. Oh, the relief. I'm going to get up and watch qualifying, definitely. And depending on where Lewis finishes in qualifying, I'll probably get up to watch the race. If he's top five, I'll watch the race.
Hey, well, he doesn't need to be in the top five to have a shot at winning, given how well that Ferrari is probably going to get off the line.
Oh, it takes off like a rocket, doesn't it? Have you seen it? Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. Boys, thank you so much for spending the last 40-something minutes chatting about our favourite thing. What fun we have. How joyful. Thank you for bringing glee to my life, you two.
So welcome.
Always a pleasure.
Say bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.